And welcome back to the Roundtable on a beautiful Wednesday morning, 14 minutes after 9 o'clock. Ray Graff, America's guest host, in for Joe Donahue today on the Roundtable. And what a panel we have. It is, it's always good to welcome back communications consultant Joe Bonilla, who just flew in from the coast yesterday. Welcome back, Joe.
Good to be here, Ray.
Where were you?
I was in San Francisco, Las Vegas, and L.A. It was part work, part fun.
Did you win any money at the tables?
You know, a little bit.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's your game, man?
Roulette for me.
Roulette?
Yeah, I'm that guy.
It's very simple. What do you mean?
Well, not simple. There's a finesse to it.
Now, you play the single zeros or the double zeros?
Oh, I do. I play the field.
Over at the Stratosphere, they have single zero roulette, which is much better odds.
Oh, there you go.
Remember that. Chris Churchill here, Times Union columnist. Good morning, Chris.
Hello. Good morning.
How are you doing, sir?
Very well.
Really?
Yeah, well, better than average.
You seem so-so. But
this guy gets paid by the word.
Who?
Chris.
Yeah?
So if you think when you say good morning, how are you doing, and expect you're going to get, but no, you know, you got the money, oh, he'll talk to you.
I'm expecting.
Do you want me to tell a long story about the morning I had? And
you know, on second thought, I withdraw the question. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is here. Good morning, Jen.
Good morning, Ray.
Nice to have you here as well.
It is always good to be sitting across from you.
Anything new over in the Berkshires?
Always.
What's going on?
Well, actually, it's in my field, it's slightly quieter because it is public school spring break, but all the more wild to look into school budgets. That's so exciting.
That's never dry at all. Alan Shartok is here, and Alan, there is a big event coming up.
There is. It's the Great Pete Seeger Memorial. It is a centennial birthday concert featuring Happy Trowne, one of the best folk singers alive, if not the best, Monday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. We have some tickets left, a lot of phone calls yesterday, and the proceeds, of course, go into the lockbox, which is great. So you get Pete. We honor our Pete. He is ours. And then you hear Happy channeling, not imitating, but channeling Pete so that we can all, you know, remember what it was like to have one guy stand up in front of the room with an audience and sing together. That's what this is going to be.
Will you be sitting in at all?
No, but I will be there.
Okay.
I will be there because I'm a big, you know, of course, I think of Pete every day. I really do. And then Happy, there's nobody better than Happy. 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262. Pete and Happy were very good friends. Pete, of course, had started Sing Out, and Happy had been the editor of Sing Out, and Happy is homespun tapes, and he did all of that. He's quite a guy.
And the event is when?
Yes, thank you for that.
Sure.
May 3rd at 7 p.m. That's when it is.
At the Linda.
But if you don't have a ticket, you know, I can't guarantee you can get in.
Well, this is exciting, and so you make your pledge, you get your tickets to, I believe they are will call.
Yeah, you make your pledge, you get your tickets.
All right, and you will be there at least to introduce the show, and maybe the Kanye into coming up and doing another.
Well, I don't think so.
No? You retired?
I'm not in that class.
All right.
No.
If you want to find out more, you can also go to WAMC.org.
But maybe.
I knew it. I knew you. You got the banjo at the ready all the time.
It's on my wall right here. I got one of them.
It's beautiful. You want to bring it in during the break?
Sure.
Sometimes when Joe Bruschak is here, he plays that flute.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe you play a little banjo. Yeah. That'll clear the room fairly quickly.
That and something else.
The panel is underway here, and you can email us at panel@wamc.org if you want to complain. Keep your letters short, to the point, on topic. Try not to abbreviate. Obviously, no attachments. Stay clear of the viruses.
Don't be a troll.
Well, I mean, one man's troll is another man's critic. Right?
I see.
So, right. You know, stiff upper lip, old boy, and we can always take it, but be kind if you can. The email address here is panel@wamc.org. Once again, Alan Shartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, Joe Bonilla are here, and you as well. French President Emmanuel Macron is setting a 5-year deadline to restore the 12th century Notre Dame Cathedral. Bishop Patrick Chaveau acknowledged that the famed monument would close down for 5 or 6 years. French Prime Minister Edouard Philippe has announced International's Architects Competition to rebuild the spire of Notre Dame. Meanwhile, the Paris Prosecutor's Office says investigators are looking into the causes of the fire. They still haven't been able to look inside. It remains unsafe. Investigators will continue interviews today, and it will go on until they find out the true identity or origin of the fire.
You know what's interesting about that? You say it's too early to go in. They went in. People went in during the thing. And they grabbed these
the relics and terribly, things like that.
Terribly important relics, and they brought them out. And firefighters, you know, they were miraculous.
$1 billion has already poured in for this restoration effort. Wow.
Yeah, I don't think that that's going to be the problem at all with this reconstruction and rebuilding. And but I do think it's an interesting time that Macron has decided to speak up about unifying the country when there's so much division within the country. Sadly, you know, right now the country is unified in both grief and outrage. You know, you have the Yellow Vest who've been protesting since November about things, starting with the fuel tax and going on from there. The fact that he canceled sort of what was supposed to be a resolution after like some 10,000 meetings across the country about these issues. And now he's making the Notre Dame his pet.
Well, don't you think
project.
That's a symbol like that is fairly important?
I think it's important, but I think
let's leave politics aside.
Just for
come
a minute.
On,
just
you, for a minute. You cynical reporters. With your...
Just doing my job, Chris.
No, but it is interesting if you think about it. You know, he's playing the. We used to play handball off the wall, right? And then you always had to know how to play it when it came one way or the other. He certainly is playing it correctly. You know, he's got to stand for election and all the rest of it. So instead of a 10-year thing or a 15-year thing, he says it's got to be in 5 years.
But
smart.
I mean, the part of the problem, too, though, was that the France and the diocese have been arguing for a long time about just doing restoration there, too. And then all of a sudden, now that, you know, million and billionaires have stepped up making all these pledges, like, okay, this, we'll take it on. The government will spearhead this the credit.
That's a weird part of it is that the cathedral is owned by the French government through the Ministry of Culture, but then basically the Roman Catholic Church is responsible for all the restoration, staffing, things like that. So the question is, where is all this money being pledged to? Mm-hmm. And we still haven't been answered that yet.
Mm. It's interesting. Sometimes you don't realize what you have until it's gone. And I'm reminded that we have all these vacant churches all around this region, mm-hmm. you know, that are, you know, falling down and need money for restoration. And, you know, the money isn't there. And, you know, a lot of them are disappearing and they're an important part of the cityscape and landscape around here.
We tore down a beautiful one in
Watervliet
that I used to see weekly. And now it's a shopping center.
Yeah, it's a beautiful strip mall.
Well, I think there's no denying that something as massive and as important to Western civilization as Notre Dame needs to be fixed.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical of that architectural competition to rebuild the spire. I mean, can't we just kind of make it look like it already looks or already looked? I don't really think like
there's plenty
a modern.
Right.
Yeah. Now remember, that spire went in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. That doesn't go back to the 1300s. Right. So that was a relatively new addition.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And part of the other issue, too, is that there had been restorations and modifications to the cathedral, too. So nobody has a real record of what actually was original or not. So the spire, as you said, Ray, was built in the 1870s. But, I mean, this could be an opportunity to kind of marry, obviously, that era with some modern things. You saw with the Cuttie Sark, you know, in England, where they had restored it. They had put some glass to it. And they restored it in a way which was actually a really nice job. So they could do something where it honors the past, but is built for the future.
Right. And what did you say, cutting sark?
It's a cutty sark.
It's a ship.
It's a whiskey.
Also a whiskey.
also a whiskey.
Which bears the ship on its label.
Yeah.
But I think...
Well, we're at a standstill.
I work for a congressman, and that's all he drank. Cutty sark.
Cutty sark.
There you go.
I know about it.
Well, we could talk about booze for the next
time. There you go.
If you wish.
It's a whole other show.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org if you would like to email your favorite scotch. panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, Joe Bonilla on the panel today. Interesting and disturbing news out of Colorado. Schools in the Denver area on heightened alert this morning after authorities say a woman who is quote-unquote infatuated with the 1999 shootings at Columbine, made threats just days before the 20th anniversary of that attack. Authorities are looking for 18-year-old Sol Pais after undisclosed threats prompted Columbine and more than 20 other schools outside Denver to lock down for nearly 3 hours yesterday afternoon. All schools in the Denver area urged to tighten up security. There was an FBI and state police press conference, I believe, yesterday or early this morning. And they said, okay, we know that Sol Pais arrived in Colorado and promptly bought a pump shotgun and ammunition.
How in the heck does that happen? I guess, you know, how do you go from Miami getting off a plane and walking into a gun store and buying a gun like this with this sort of, I guess, a digital trail of making these threats or
and while we're on knowledge. The while we're on the subject, I was fascinated by the word infatuated. I mean, we kept hearing about infatuation.
Yeah.
You know, you fall in love with a girl and you're a guy or whatever, and you're infatuated. But infatuated doesn't seem to have the danger, the implicit danger.
I don't know where that term came from. So I don't know if it was a spokesperson.
I believe the FBI
bulletin.
Yeah, and there was a press conference, and I think that was the actual word that was used.
Yeah, it was.
I watched it.
But who put that forth? Like, was it someone's characterization of that, or did she say that she was infatuated? I think that could have just been a spokesperson.
There's a whole subculture. A lot of mass shooters do have this. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not the right word. Infatuation.
Obsession.
Obsession with Columbine. In the eyes of some rather sick people, they've become almost folk heroes, you know, and it's part of the disturbing thing about...
Sure, with Columbine, it was the trench coat mafia.
Yeah, right.
So if you take our population and statistically, you take a look at how many people could really be mentally ill in that population with this kind of infatuation, even if it's a small part of 1%, that's all it takes, right?
Yeah. I mean, the other part of it is, obviously, with every single incident we've seen with Parkland and what happened in Las Vegas, like the need for these copycats to kind of emerge, basically this copycat culture. And so we're seeing the same thing where upon these anniversaries, we have folks like this will come out of the woodwork.
Sure. It was the same thing why we still have heightened security earlier this week for the Boston Marathon and other incidents. But I think it comes down to really scrutinizing this law that made it so easy for this person to just swoop in across different state borders and purchase a weapon with, again, she was clearly on someone's radar, or very quickly under someone's radar. And then, how do you... You know, what do you do, I guess, is the question.
But in the end, Jen, it all comes down to the Supreme Court and their foolish decision-making. Because no matter what laws you pass, there's still going to be a court up there and says everybody has a right to have a gun, misinterpreting what that amendment, Second Amendment, was all about. And until somebody changes that, I think
I don't know. I mean, the Supreme Court has pretty clearly said that that legislatures have the right to regulate within the Second Amendment. I mean, that was a key part of the Heller decision. Mm-hmm. The laws that are being made largely by legislatures. If people have a problem with them, that's where they should take them up.
Well, I don't want
to get... It's certainly true that if you try to ban all weapons or all guns or handguns, that sort of thing, you would run into the Supreme Court.
Or even classes sometimes.
Sometimes, but we had an assault weapons ban in the 1990s that stood
well,
up.
Well, to be clear, this is a pump shotgun. This is a hunting. This is not an assault weapon.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, you know, I don't want to get into your column here, Chris, and get into trouble with you. But I do think the court has a tremendous role. That was a shot, by the way, in case you didn't hear it.
Shot? Is that a pun?
I do think that the court has basically wave the green flag. Remember at the beach, if there's a red flag, you couldn't swim. If there's a green flag, you could.
But I think the kind of thing that Jen is talking about, you know, people who are on watch lists,
regardless of even if she was on
was she on a watch list?
Well, I don't know.
No,
I'm not.
No.
That's a
question. But
even
regardless if she was, like, I just, like, if I am a gun shop owner and I see someone who, you know, comes in. I'm assuming, I don't even know if you have to show ID. And
you just
have
to show them green.
Well, that's all it matters. Yeah, exactly. It depends on the shop owner, right?
Your card. It just seems super easy. I mean, it could have been a local student who also bought
exactly.
that. But it just seemed it seems so easy. And I think it's disturbing, especially in a time and an era where, as students who were interviewed yesterday, if you read the Denver Post articles or any other ones, that this is the norm, that they're used to being under lockdown. Anytime an anniversary happens or something like that, anytime there's a school shooting somewhere else where they're used to going under lockdown because of threat, and that's not right.
We have to take a quick break. Alan, you want to mention one more thing? You have 12 seconds.
Okay, 1-800-323-9262. If you want to get into the Pete Seeger, there's only 200 tickets. There were only May 3rd at 7 p.m.
Okay, and we will take a break. This is the round table on WAMC. Jen Smith, Alan Chartok, Chris Churchill, and Joe Bonilla are on the panel. The email address is panel@wamc.org, and we'll be back. You know, our engineer Mike Bowen's under the weather. He's been fighting a terrible
chemical.
But you know what? He still comes through and gets me Count Basie as bumper music when I fill in for Joe on the show. Thank you, Mike Bowen.
Thanks,
very
Mike.
Well done, sir. It's the roundtable panel today. Ray is in for Joe. Alan is here. Jen Smith is here from the Berkshire Eagle. The Times Union's Chris Churchill is here. And communications consultant Joe Bonilla is here. And if you want to weigh in on anything, panel@wamc.org is the email address. panel@wamc.org. President Trump's lawyers are putting the finishing touches on the rebuttal to the forthcoming report by special counsel Robert Mueller. It's not even out yet, and they've got the rebuttal going. Rudy Giuliani, one of the president's attorneys, said yesterday that the document will be dozens of pages long. Giuliani says it'll be published in the hours after the release of Mueller's report, expected tomorrow. The Justice Department says it expects to unveil a redacted version of the 400-page document sometime tomorrow. Attorney General Robert Barr last month released a 4-page summary of the report and said Mueller did not conclude that Trump's campaign colluded with the Russians. Meanwhile, Democrats are already calling for Mueller himself to testify before Congress, and they've expressed concern that Barr will order unnecessary censoring of the report to protect the president. Let's go to our political observer, Dr. Alan Chartok.
Well, I think a lot's going to depend, as I've said again and again, the attorney general. We know that he has in the past indicated that he doesn't like any of this. And since he's been confirmed by the Senate, in which he presented himself as a very reasonable, down-the-middle type of guy, we know that he's shown himself to what he truly is a protector of the president. So the redactions and which redactions are going to become problematic for the people who are running these various committees. And the Congress is not going to like it, that's for sure. So
redactions are common, though. Right? I mean, always, like grand jury testimony and things like that have to be by law redacted, right?
No, I don't know that they have to be, because there are ways to get around it. Look, in the Nixon tapes, there was a question about grand jury testimony, but they got it included by doing it the right way. Now, Ray, no matter how defensive you are about this.
I'm not defensive in any way. I'm just saying
there's
a redaction in most things that you see. Methods and sources, always redacted. Grand jury testimony, always redacted.
Well, then how come it was in the Nixon tape case? They went and they got excused and then it was okay. And it was there. No, Ray, I don't agree with you. And the other thing is, why not at least show the unredacted copies to the people who are running the various committees? That's what ought to be happening right here. And then they, as well as the president and all the president's men, will be able to make that decision. Don't you see?
I think some of it does have to be redacted. I agree with. I mean, there may be people in there who came forward with information who don't want their name released to the world. There might be people who are just kind of innocent. I mean, there are reasons to redact it, but I'm kind of more interested in this whole idea of the rebuttal.
Yeah. I thought they weren't supposed to see the report.
They haven't seen it. I mean, presumably they would know a little bit of what's in there since they've been the target of the investigation for so many.
They have seen it. Come on. You'd have to be, you'd have to be Alice in Wonderland going down
the
rabbit
hole. Well, at least
they're
pretending they haven't seen
it.
Right. And if they're pretending they haven't seen it, to release a detailed rebuttal within
dozens
minutes.
Dozens of pages long.
Yeah, right. It's a little odd.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
What are you looking at me for?
I don't know.
Every time I say something, as soon as I start to talk, you just jump in and tell me I'm wrong. So
hang on.
Now, fellas.
Did I tell him he was wrong?
Well, you indicated.
Don't make me turn this car around.
I mean, despite the fact that he was wrong, I didn't say he was wrong. We have some letters there, Alan.
Oh, yeah, we have some letters
That's
there.
That's why I was looking at you.
Oh, I see.
Subtle hint. Read the letters.
Mike says, guns. In order to buy a gun from a gun shop, you must fill out a form and pass an FBI background check. Even in my state of Vermont, where gun laws are the Second Amendment. And that's from Mike. Okay.
All right. So presumably she passed.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But the real question is, what was the role of the guy who got the money, the seller of the gun? And did he pick up a phone and say, there's something not right here? That way he gets both the money and does the right thing.
I think that's, you know, a pathway that...
Okay.
It's an option.
Yeah. Oh, I see what's going on here. It's a long story, but usually when I flip over the letters after I have used them, Joe's machine is in the way.
Ah.
And I see all of you, that's a lot, over here when I flip it now, and I'm saying, I wonder why it's different today. That's all.
Yeah, I don't use electronic
sort of barriers between you two, so you can't look at each other.
Right, right.
It's causing friction.
Ben says, rebuild Notre Dame. Spend hundreds of millions of dollars while people go hungry, live in poverty in their country and their former colonies. Money can be better spent. It could have been better spent when the church was built. And that's Ben. Well, I'm Jewish, so who am I to come in?
I don't think it's either or. You know what I mean? People always... everything anybody spends money on, there's always a better way to spend it. But this is a building that's important to Western civilization, I think. Mm-hmm. It's important to the French people. If they want to rebuild it, it's their decision.
I couldn't agree with you more.
However,
the point of being, about the church, Jesus literally walked around in a loincloth and, in a white robe of some kind. And now you see people walking around in gold vestments. And you say, couldn't that money have been better spent?
Every time somebody buys a new car, you could say that money should be better spent on feeding the poor.
Essentially anything.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'm not totally unsympathetic to the argument. But on the other hand, there's something impressive about a building that took... I mean, people who are working on that building...
Lived and died, and
their kids lived and died.
At the ripe age of 28 when they built the
building. That kind of dedication to a project is something that is so rare in the modern world, and I think it really does have value.
It is an apex of Western civilization and deserves...
What are you guys looking at me for? I am all for rebuilding this thing.
You read the letter, sir.
Yes.
Don't make me into the bad guy.
But I think you can't rebuild without having a consciousness or context of what's been going on in France. You have a dwindling middle class there. Basically people have been priced out of city centers and have to go to rural areas and have to, use cars to get them. And then you have this, skyrocketing fuel tax. So I think that's why the timing of this is so interesting. And even though you want to separate it and say, like, we're restoring this national and international treasure, but at the same time,
well, if this could be
the place and time it's happening with the leader who's going to be sort of the spokesperson for this, you have to look at it from all these angles.
If this can be a unifying thing for France, I think that's a great thing. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice if we had something that was like that for us.
Mm-hmm. It would be
I think as a relatively new country, it's sometimes we don't really understand what it would mean to have a building like
that. Well, what about mm-hmm. the Statue of Liberty? What about...
Well, yeah, but it was all relatively new comparatively. Yeah, it came from France.
Yeah. But I think also it would be interesting, like we were talking about the architecture contest before. Well, we've not even done a feasibility study of, how much it will actually cost. So it does matter who's taking in the money, who's managing the money, what will happen with any excess pledges. Can it be used to actually better the neighborhoods and areas around that? Almost. How you design this restructuring, rebuilding campaign, I think is really important, and that messaging really will make a difference for people.
Well, it's more intricate reconstruction versus like rebuilding a whole neighborhood like the World Trade Center.
Sure.
So, the scope of it, Yeah, it's a roof and then up it's a spire, but mm-hmm. you know, the scope of it's not going to be as extensive as maybe $1 billion worth of, yeah. of repairs.
Well, that's true. And then we heard from Bob, as we often do, who said, crazed Columbine loving woman. Mentally ill woman who was infatuated with the Columbine massacre flew from Florida to Colorado, exercised her Second Amendment right, bought her shotgun and ammunition, and the local schools have closed for safety. I'm sure Trump will tweet some gibberish celebrating how well the airlines, the Second Amendment, and law enforcement work, and tell the kids to enjoy their day or days off from school, Bob from Schenectady. Yeah. All right.
And we don't know if she is actually diagnosed mentally ill. She might have, you know, not the most agreeable way of thinking right now, right. but we still don't know much about her.
Is the brain formed by 18? Do we know that?
No.
I don't think so.
Depends. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. I think you make a valid point.
I do?
Yeah.
Okay, Cheryl says, current discussion about buying guns. Good morning, panel. I find it impossible to believe that you can just go in and buy a gun without showing any identification. We don't know that, right?
Mm-hmm. No, we do not know.
Right. No. When if I want to buy beer, cigarettes, or a lottery ticket, I need to show my license. When in the balance, in what? Where's the balance in that? Or the common sense? And that's Cheryl from Wyndham, New York.
I would presume that she did show identification. I mean, yeah. you have to be 18. I just, mm-hmm. yeah.
I'm presuming that that guy.
I mean, how else would they know that she bought a gun? In other words,
right.
they know she went to Shop X and bought a gun.
Right, because there's a record of it.
Right.
Or
right.
the guy picked up the phone and said, something's not right here.
Then he wouldn't have sold the gun.
No, that's wrong. As usual, that's just plain wrong.
We don't know.
He may.
We don't know.
We don't know. The panel resolutely follows my lead in criticizing you.
we'll go on, dear leader.
Pauline says, naming the young woman. I'm disappointed to hear you name the young woman who is threatening the schools in Denver. Fame is what a shooter often is looking for. Don't give it to them. Thanks.
She's not a shooter.
Good point.
Yeah.
And so when we are looking for someone who has robbed a bank or anything else, right. Or is a person of interest even, we do name the person so that if someone is looking at an ID card or something, that can make that identification.
It's clear there's a massive manhunt or mm-hmm. person hunt right now going on. So,
and then we heard from Danny, who says, I think the term shows, the term is Colorado, the subject line is Colorado in the use of infatuated. I think the term shows perhaps a little bit of sexism? Question mark. Never have heard an individual described as infatuated with a crime. As you say, the word might have been obsessed, etc. I think it has to do with the fact that the woman is young, attractive, etc. Ridiculous, from Danny.
I think again, the origin of that phrase might just be interesting. It might have been someone, you know, a spokesperson from a department who maybe that term just kind of popped out. And, you know, when we're speaking on the fly, sometimes that happens.
Yeah. Like even on this panel, sometimes people will say things that are a little off.
Hey, wait. Was that a shot?
Speaking of that, Alan, there's an event coming up May 3rd that we need to speak about, and then we have to take a break.
You're the best.
Thank you very much.
And WAMC presents Pete Seeger's Centennial Birthday Concert with a great Happy Tram. Doesn't get any better than happy. May 3rd at 7 p.m., $100 pledge per ticket at the Linda WAMC's Performing Arts Studio. If you've never been there, this is the time to go. And we'll all celebrate Pete and we'll sing together.
This is a fundraiser for us, right?
This is a fundraiser for the Lockbox, that's right. So your money goes a long way.
Believe it or not, the fund drive, I saw this on the whiteboard in the pledge room, the fund drive room. It's like early June. When did that happen?
It's like the it just keeps on giving.
Yes, indeed. Let's take a break. It's the roundtable panel. Alan Shartok is here, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, Joe Bonilla, Ray in for Joe. The email address is panel@wamc.org. We're halfway through the panel. More to come.
Really?
A little Count Basie here on the roundtable. And people have broken out into discussion groups. We're on the air. And hi, everybody. The light goes on. And then
the light goes on. These guys aren't radio people.
You know what?
So they don't
That's
know
okay.
About
I totally forgive everyone.
Thank you.
Except you.
I know that.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. 947, Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It is the roundtable panel. Joe Bonilla is here. Chris Churchill is here. Jen Smith is here. The aforementioned Alan Chartok is here. President Trump is predicting that Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and former Vice President Joe Biden will be the final two Democrats standing in the 2020 race against him. Looking ahead to his reelection campaign, Trump tweeted yesterday he believes it'll be crazy Bernie Sanders versus sleepy Joe Biden as the two as the two finalists to run against maybe the best economy in the history of our country and many other great things. Sanders leading the crowded 2020 field. He's raised $18 million so
Actually,
far.
Actually, Biden is leading the crowd. He's just not in yet.
Biden has not entered the race. He is widely expected to. Thank you.
But I'm not trying to give you a hard time. Believe me, the last thing I'd ever want to do, Ray, is give you a hard time.
I just want to finish.
Oh, please.
That's all.
Oh, please. I have been rude.
Trump says, I look forward to facing whoever it may be, and then added with this, may God rest their soul.
Wow.
Don't know if that's a threat, but there you go. Yeah.
Well, that's some interesting news. There had been a lot of speculation about what nickname Joe Biden would get if he ran. So now it's nice to know that Sleepy Joe seems to be the...
I feel like that's recycled.
But he had Crazy Joe.
I know, but you can't do Crazy Joe and Crazy Bernie.
But did he call sleepy-eyed someone?
Wasn't Sleepy Joe a character on Petticoat Junction?
Regardless.
Well, that was low-energy Jeb or whatever. That's kind of similar.
Yeah. Well, what you really want to think about when he does these is who does he really want? Right. In other words, Brer Rabbit, don't throw me in the briar patch. So I think that's the question. When he assigns these names, you get a sense of who he would like to be his opponent.
I think most people presume he would like to run against Bernie Sanders.
I would think so. Yeah.
Let me ask the political scientist a question.
Where?
You. Oh. Democrats raised so far $75 million in the first quarter of the year. That's a rather lackluster number for a whole group of 17, 18 people. Does that augur bad things for the Democrats in 2020?
This is going to be a very competitive election. I meet people all the time who say, well, you don't have to worry about Trump. He's gone. That is not true. And in fact, all the polling shows it's not true. It's going to be very close. It's going to be a matter of turnout, and it's going to be a matter of who puts money in. By the time you add up all the money that Trump either has or has added since he's been president, he's been shameless about raising money from day one for his reelection. It's a great deal of money. I don't know where I saw it, but I thought it came out to something like $100 million. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a substantial amount of sum for a president seeking re-election right now. And I think what I saw also is that he's at the clip he's going is one of the fastest in recent memory as well.
Yeah. So anyway, you want me to read or not?
Sure. You got emails?
Yeah.
Oh, terrific.
And Virginia says, can someone tell me how Trump's administration can prepare a 35-page rebuttal to a document they claim that they have not seen or presumably know nothing about? And that's for Virginia. And she is so right. You guys mentioned it down at the other end of the table here. You mentioned that was the case.
Yeah.
Yep.
Didn't you?
Yeah, we sure did.
Yeah. So I have never thought, by the way, they weren't leaving. Remember Nunez hiding in the bushes?
I remember that day.
To give them the money and to give them the info. Look, they're leaking it. I'm interested in Rosenstein because in the beginning he sort of became a hero and that he had appointed a special prosecutor and all the rest of it. But now it would seem to be he's on Team T, whatever it's
called. Well, in that he was one of those who concluded that there was no obstruction?
Yes. Mm. That's right, Ray. Thank you for that.
That's fine.
Okay, yes. And Terran says, Notre Dame is a moral symbol. Notre Dame is an important symbol of a time when Western citizens thought it important to be guided by spiritual ideals. Pardon me. And moral purpose. The fire is a counter symbol of recent times when the West seems to have given into being ruled by the pursuit of money alone. This leads to a decline of civilization, as we cannot have a good society when our leaders tell us money is all that is all that matters. And that's from Terrence LCSW.
Clinical social work.
Uh-huh. That's what it is. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Good work.
Very good.
Redaction. Good morning, panel. Ray and Chris are correct. In modern times, there are always redactions. The president and vice president's testimony was not even included in the 9/11 commission's report. And that's Jeff from New Pulse. Mm-hmm. Come on, give me a break. The fact of the matter is, you know, you can redact what you want to redact, and he will. And we know where he's coming from, and we know what he wrote before he even got the job, his so-called job application, where he was coming from. Now, you got to keep an eye on this guy. He's a no-good, Nick. Joseph.
Oh, Joseph. The writer?
I think he's talking about you, right?
No, the writer's fine.
Oh.
No.
He was looking at you when he said it.
Oh, Chris. I get that a lot. You should come in the newsroom about 7:15.
Okay. And Joseph, the panel. Hi. Perhaps a better question regarding the young woman in Colorado is, how did a person who's been making mass shooter-type comments, et cetera, on social media manage to evade a visit from the authorities to inspect her mental health condition? Anybody who considers mass murder is, and that's in capital letters, is, by definition, a person with mental illness condition. Everybody, also in capital letters, in America, must, in capital letters, submit to a federal form. And if she has a clean record, she is eligible. That is how they knew she had made the purchase. How do you spell eligible? Is that two L's?
No.
What do we know, in fact, about this Sol Pais?
Very
little.
Did
she, in fact, make any comments on social media? I don't know this for a fact.
And I think that's sort of the murkiness of the FBI bulletin, is that we got the sense that she, you know, was a person of interest from them. Obviously, they said that she was extremely dangerous, but I really have not seen any other kind of hard evidence that demonstrates what, why, or how. You know, there's nothing like in other cases of threats where there's a social media video of someone stockpiling weapons or, you know, practicing or you know, sharing propaganda or something like that. So this is a kind of an interesting one to keep watch on. Again, yeah. I still have a whole host of questions.
Jen, don't you see that, you know, this is when if something bad happens and there was a single little clue earlier, somebody's going to say, why didn't they follow up on that? Mm-hmm. Don't you see?
I've been covering school violence for more than a decade.
Oh, yeah.
So.
No. In no way did I mean in any way to question your credentials. Mm-hmm. I just think it's an interesting panel.
But I think it also becomes, you know, this cyclical process of where these questions come up and what are we doing about it. And again, you know, it's the end of the day that schools and law enforcement and are spending so much time and energy on this issue that only becomes an issue when something like this happens. Otherwise, no one's been talking about it in their campaigns running for office right now.
I mean, to be clear, as far as I know, this woman has not committed any crimes yet.
Yeah? That's correct.
No.
And yet there is a massive, quote unquote, massive manhunt on right now. So I presume they'll be able to find her.
One in one makes two.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, you have her obsession, if that's the word you want, with Columbine. You have the fact that she walked into a store and ordered a shotgun. Nor do you remember. Do we know what she said to that store owner? Something started the process here.
I'm not sure.
Well, if it was,
in other words, her mother may have said, and I believe her mother did say, "Look, she went missing." Then they found that she went on a plane to Columbine, Colorado, and then it's perhaps her mom who said, "Look, she's had a kind of a weird infatuation with Columbine."
You don't know that.
But you don't know that the gun owner.
I'm just raising a possibility. I'm trying to give Chris something to write about this week.
I don't know. I think Chris is already checking the racing form. Frankly, I don't even know.
You know, I just pulled up the Bolo bulletin, and again, there's just very, very little information.
Yeah, we don't know why they're so worried.
Something
about
happened,
it.
Yeah. Right?
It sounds like her mother may have alerted
authorities. The store owner, the woman comes in, she starts talking about where's that school, or who knows.
It's still not clear if she made the comments, obviously, when she was purchasing the gun, or.
But I think it's maybe her comments also came at a time where, again, there's this sensitivity that this anniversary is coming up at the end of the week. Well, obviously, she did make the geographical trip.
She made the trip.
So that is, definitely a red flag. I mean, if I were a teacher there, a principal, a student, and a parent, I'd Yeah. Maybe keep my kid home from school.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org. If you would like to join the conversation this morning, we'll get to more letters after the top of the hour news. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Berkshire Eagle reporter Jen Smith is here. Times Union columnist Chris Churchill is here. And communications consultant Joe Bonilla is here.
And you're here.
I am here. I am Ray. I am in for Joe today. Don't forget, if you want to go to the Pete Seeger Centennial Show at the Linda, it is May 3rd.
That's right. It's actually his 100th birthday.
That's why it's a centennial show.
You know, you make a point.
And it's a fundraiser for us. And Happy Traum will be performing. You can call 800-323-9262 if you want to get on the will call list for a pledge. We'll take a break for news and then more Roundtable. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 10:06 on a Wednesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's the Roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Jen Smith, Chris Churchill, and Joe Bonilla are here today to discuss events in the news and beyond, whatever that may mean. And you can join the conversation by emailing us at panel@wamc.org.
Not that I would understand why anybody would want to do this.
What do you mean?
But I'm about to say, if you could just let me finish the sentence.
All right.
And that is, you can watch this.
Yeah, you
can watch this, and you go to WAMC.org, and then you say, what do you say there? You say, you can watch this.
You say, okay, computer. What do you mean? You click on a link that shows the video.
Yeah, click on a link and shows the video.
It's not recommended, by the way.
No, no. Please
the
no.
The reason I'm raising this is that I just saw Chris Churchill do a very sneaky thing.
What did he do?
He drinks only out of a Times Union cup.
What's wrong with
he's
that?
He's got to represent.
He works. Nothing
wrong
with that.
Do you mind my finishing? And then he very
boy,
subtly,
you are crotchety. Holy mackerel.
He subtly moved it around so that it faced the camera.
That is
so anybody who is...
Well, you're
it is inaccurate. I like to forget
glasses.
That camera's there.
It's not mine.
There,
it's facing me. It's not facing
all right, so the
thing.
Three people who are watching it are going to see his Times Union logo.
The 2.5 people, right?
You never know. That might want to say, I really like that Chris Churchill. I'm going to leave him $1 million.
What an attractive mug he's drinking out of. What is that?
Yeah, this show's off the rails.
Really?
Is that what... Okay. We were talking in the break about the fundraising, the Democratic fundraisers, and how much each candidate has made. And it's pretty clear Bernie Sanders leading the pack at this point, $18 million. Kamala Harris, $12 million. Beto O'Rourke, $9 million. And some of the outliers, Elizabeth Warren, $6
million. Mayor Pete's at $7
million,
isn't he?
Yeah, Mayor Pete is at $7 million, right. So he's in the top four. But there are other, I mean, Jen, you asked the question, whatever happened to Cory Booker?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's raised $5 million. I guess that's something, right?
I mean, what happened to Cory Booker? That's a very good good question, because a lot of people assumed he'd really be in it, in this, but he hasn't. And the only thing I can think of is that very early in his career, he was much more of a sort of militant type of voice. And now he's a much more moderate voice as he runs for president. So I'm thinking some of the early reputation may have, you know, made him less attractive to people.
It's a really crowded field. It's very hard for anybody to stand out. Yeah. I mean, Mayor Pete, for some reason, really, well, not for some reason, for obvious reasons, really has. But some of these people, I mean, the people are going to fall by the wayside. Cory Booker.
Wait a minute. They didn't fall by the wayside until well in the Republican campaign, well after the debates. I mean, we saw the stage. It was barely hold up everybody who was on the stage.
No, and that's definitely true.
Hey, Ray, Chris is a guest here. You don't say, wait a minute.
All right. I'm offended, sir.
But
it's important to point out that nobody has voted yet. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. But yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say also, too, I think there's definitely still like some regionality about it. I think, you know, Amy Klobuchar, for example, is more well-known in some parts of the country than others. And I'm sure that has to do with things, too. But I also think it depends on, you know, what other information we're finding out about people, too. I know, like, for example, Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, you know, scored some headlines from releasing their tax returns and you know, pulling that narrative out for a while, too. So, you know, that their finances and, you know, their spending have been brought out. And, of course, they're putting that before Trump is sort of like a taunt, which...
The interesting thing to watch will be to see if candidates start dropping out in some sort of kind of planned stop Bernie type movement, you know, because that's what Republicans didn't really do.
Right.
So these ended up with proxy candidates.
Right. All the people like Kirsten Gillibrand, Cory Booker, people who aren't really doing well.
Hickenlooper.
Hickenlooper might start to feel pressure to drop out so that Bernie doesn't get the 25% each time out and just start really racking up delegates.
But the issue is who will be the first of that group to do that.
Right.
And
right.
If you're running for president, you already have the ego that's not going
or
to
if
allow
there will be a
right, which is what you saw with the Republican field.
Right.
So your assumption, Chris, is not that I would ever doubt you, but your assumption is that there is a sort of unified anti-Bernie sentiment in the middle of the people running in
from the established from the establishment of the party for sure.
Well,
I think that's
I'm
well documented.
By how many
I mean, that was well documented in 2016. I think that's still well documented. Whether or not that they should be doing that, whether they should be kind of trying to stop one candidate instead of another, is a very good question. But I think there will be pressure to do so.
Well, to me, the number one question is who can stop Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bernie, I still think you have to examine all politics, and I could get into a lot of trouble from this, based on tribalism. You know, that there are a certain number of candidates, of people who will vote for a candidate because they're more like me. Don't you see? So I think we have some of that going right now. And Mayor Pete obviously has a lot of young people who are really in love with the guy. Obviously, the gay community will unite behind him and give money because it's so important to make the point that it's about time that we mainstreamed you know, the gay community. If you analyze this as a political scientist, Ray, would do, you always call me that.
Yes.
You would say, okay, who are the natural groups that will support a candidate and who won't? So if Bernie gets himself up to, let's say, the same 40% of the population that Trump has, so now it's a 40-40 race, people will say, well, he can't win. That's what you worry about.
Let me ask the political scientist another question here. Are we putting too much weight on the amount of money raised? And here's the reason I ask, and maybe my memory is poor from, I'm sure it's poor, but in 2000, in the last election, 2016, the Republicans, Jeb raised a lot of money, a lot of people raised money. Trump didn't spend very much money. He got an awful lot of free publicity.
He did.
Does the amount raised actually mean that so-and-so is the front runner?
No. But what it does mean is you can buy all the time on TV and radio that you want. I mean, we have Joe and others who do this for a living. And they know if you've got, you know, a lot of money to spend on TV, you start buying that TV time now in order to lock everybody else out. So the amount of money means a great deal.
The candidates that raise the most money tend to be the candidates who appeal most to wealthier / whiter audiences. No, Bernie's appeal is generally with the wealthier side of the Democratic Party. He has historically done poorly with minority sections of the party.
That's true. Bernie has a big problem with the black population.
So the
in America.
Candidates that do better with whiter voters tend to raise more money.
Yeah, but
then that's an unfair. I mean, that's just an unfair reality of the situation.
Well, poorer or richer. See, in other words, I think, you know, you get a Hillary Clinton, she's going to get a lot of checks from the big boys. We've seen that. You get a Bernie, you get, you know, overnight, he raises immense amounts of money from people giving him $20.
Right.
You know?
But most of those people have the money to spare. What I'm saying is people who don't have the money to spare tend not to give. And that's unfortunate. And then that's a reason maybe we shouldn't pay too much attention to how much they've raised. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, money is what usually causes people to drop out of the race, right? I mean, if candidates who have money to spend don't drop out, they keep going because they think, oh, there's hope.
Yeah.
So if you look at, you know, 5, 6, 7 people who have pretty good amount of money in the bank, you can presume that those people are not going to be dropping out anytime soon.
But you know, the American people are funny about money. They both love it, worship people who have it, and at the same time aren't afraid to be anxious about it. So, for example, I hate to raise this with you now, Chris and group, but you know, Andrew Cuomo is getting a raise to $200,000. not a lot of money for a guy running a state like New York. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people are getting bonkers about it, and I think they're wrong. People, money becomes very important to people in this country.
Yeah, and I think people sometimes admire wealth.
Absolutely.
For wealth's sake. I mean, you see some of that with Trump. People think he must be a good person because he's wealthy, which is something that I've always
kind or a smart person.
Mm-hmm. Or a smart person.
Or even
yeah,
a or bad person. Yeah. A bad person who happens to have a lot of money and we worship wealth.
I didn't catch that, but...
Well, no, let me explain it to you then.
Yeah, there are people who think you're automatically bad if you're wealthy, but there are a lot of people who think you're automatically smart if you're wealthy. Mm-hmm.
That wasn't
and
what I meant.
And neither are true, I think. But
that wasn't
ahead.
What I meant. What I meant is people have respect in this country for money. Money counts, money talks, all others walk. So mm-hmm. even if you're a bad guy, there's some part of everybody's something cerebral cortex which in which they say, you know, if he's got a lot of money... that's the kind of thing I'd like to have myself. Don't you see?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Most people.
But I don't think that just because somebody has money, I don't think we should automatically admire that person.
Well,
which I think is a phenomenon that certainly happens.
You guys keep putting words in my mouth.
No, I'm not saying that you said that. I'm expressing my opinion.
Yeah.
But you know, most people, almost everybody who runs for president, is relatively wealthy too. It's not as if any of these people.
Well, Bernie is now.
He is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Well, I mean, going back to the donor, the fundraising part of it, it's not so much about the wherewithal and how much money, but obviously the number of donors. And that's really what I'm looking at. That's really the bigger benchmark of it.
And that's where Bernie's impressive.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's Bernie, like Mayor Pete. 550,000 people.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
People's fidelity to Bernie is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
In other words, these people who were for him the last time, and along comes Elizabeth Warren, all this, everybody says, Bernie's old news. No, not really.
And that's what makes him potentially the kind of the Trump of this race, because he will get consistently 25% of the vote. Mm-hmm. He, you know, the majority of voters may not be for him, but if he gets in a crowded field, that's enough to take you a long way.
I'm not.
What's interesting about the Mayor Pete thing, though, is that he's in somewhat drawing from the same crowd as the Bernie. He's drawing a lot of younger voters.
Younger,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
but I think Bernie's two advantages just being the vocal person. I mean, you know, his Fox town hall got a lot of attention the other week, but you know, versus some of the other things that came out. Again, if you look at the tax returns, and you know, Bill, I think the New York Times headline was like, you know, Bernie Sanders releases tax returns, he's in the 1%, and you know, that happened to tie in with his book sales. Same Elizabeth Warren experienced the same spike a few years ago with her book. But if you look at the numbers and look at, spending taxes paid and things like that, it tells different stories. So it depends on who you are as a voter and what aspect of money you're going to look at, too. I think there are some who argue, like, because, you know, Bernie now has to toe the line of being, you know, a millionaire who criticizes millionaires.
So I don't think anybody's buying it. I don't think people are buying it.
Yeah. That he's a millionaire? He released his taxes?
No, I don't think people are buying it that he's sold out. And that, you know, he wrote a book. Again, goes to the amorphous qualities of money in our society.
But is it enough to make, you know, say a once Bernie supporter maybe, you know, switch to a Mayor Pete supporter
that,
or someone
else? That can certainly happen.
You know?
Probably
he wrote
happened.
A book.
Yeah.
Yep. They all did. Kamala Harris wrote a book.
Okay, so anyway, we got a very
who reads these books? That's the bigger question.
Well, and it's making them a lot of money. And that's when you look at those bar graphs of like how much money they're making, how much they're pumping into their campaign.
The royalties,
you can tell when their book came out.
Mm-hmm. We got a very perceptive letter from Stacy, who wrote a column titled entitled "Alan's Right."
Oh, here we go.
Hi, Pam.
Hi, Stacy.
Hi, Pam. Alan is right about a clean report should go to the appropriate Congress committees. How can they provide oversight with three quarters or half the report blacked out? That it ain't going to be half or three quarters. It's going to be crucial. That's going to be the distinction. That's where the black lines are going to go.
We'll see.
No, we won't see.
We will see. We'll see how much of it is redacted.
I'm telling you what's happening.
Okay. Thank you, Nostradamus. Yeah, appreciate it.
Derek says 2020. Good morning, panel. Enjoying the tension this morning.
what tension?
In my humble opinion, unless the economy begins to tank prior to the 2020 election, Trump's odds of re-election are very high. That's exactly right. The Democratic Party has its work cut out, no doubt. And that's from Derek with two R's. And then we heard from Rod, who said, why the rebuttal effort? In Mueller's report, there may be ample evidence that without the efforts of the Russians, collusion or no, Trump would not have won the election. Mm-hmm. He won by 70,000 votes in three crucial states, folks. Trump will not take such a blow to his ego. Rod, well, what are his choices? Okay. Terrence says, this is not a race, it's an election. When journalists report on amounts raised and poll results, it's irresponsible. Tell me about the positions as they come out. Money is raised to get the word out, and reporting on the amount raised is an irresponsible tautology. Now, tautology is not a word you see very much these days, but there it is.
I think I would dispute that, you know.
Well, for the reasons we just discussed over the last 15 minutes.
It's still a bellwether in terms of the attention. Like, should we draw more attention for somebody or not? I mean, yes, but the issues is important, but also to see if they're a credible candidate or not.
But bonus points for using tautology, in a sense.
I would say, now, what class did we learn about tautologies in college? Was it just statistics?
The class I skipped.
Yeah, that was it.
Well done, Chris Churchill. Bonus points.
Nancy says, Bernie. There are those of us Hillary supporters that will never forget Bernie's tepid response for her. Okay, now that's an interesting point, isn't it? She says, we'll never forget the fact that Bernie wasn't there for Hillary. Is the opposite, we won't be there against Trump for Bernie? Don't you see?
Oh, yeah, whereas the party won't back him because...
Individuals, all it takes 70,000 votes.
Well, part of the reason the money, the fact that so many candidates are raising such large amounts is important is that you could have a race that goes all the way to the convention without a clear winner, in which case you could have a very messy, very bitter convention, in which case you might really have questions about, you know, is everybody unified against or behind whatever person emerges from that.
But that's not the way it's been going in recent years, as you know, Chris.
But they changed the rules. And the one thing that the Democrats, the Republicans did in 2016 that Democrats have not, it's not a winner-take-all situation. Mm-hmm. And if you win a primary, if Bernie wins a primary of 25%, he'll get 25% of the delegates, which means that a lot of people could end up at the convention with a pretty substantial number of delegates, which means you're going to have like kind of the horse trading.
But we journalists manage to always hype the convention as being something that could happen at the convention. They would turn to Cuomo, or they would turn to this one or that one. It makes an interesting column. You write it. But the way it's been working is we pretty well know when we go in the conventions who it's going to be.
That's true. But we rarely see so many candidates. I think it's highly unlikely they would pick somebody from outside the field, like a Cuomo or somebody like that.
No, but that's what he used to say. That's what the hype always was. It could be a Cuomo, you know. They might come to a unifier.
If there was, say Biden didn't run, if there was a big figure out there who didn't run, I could see maybe the party would turn to that person.
Like if they Bloomberg? Thought,
not a Bloomberg, no.
I think a Biden.
A Biden would be a good example. Say he doesn't run and you go into the convention and it's fractured and they can't unify behind anybody. Maybe in that case they turn to somebody that everybody can kind of agree on a little bit. But otherwise I don't see that.
How many people will be on the stage for that first Democratic debate? Not 18.
Well, don't they have...
No, they have a limit.
It's 10 and 10. Yeah.
But will there be enough to have a full 10? By that time, when that first debate happens.
Oh, yeah. By that time,
There's always a children's table of these things.
I mean, why would you enter the race and then drop out before that? I mean, you potentially that could be your breakout moment. Mm-hmm.
Right? You want that media
attention. And you can't fall on your face with all the voters who did. You did have to rally to get onto that stage. Yeah. So if you ever want to run again, you don't.
Right. I think the first one's coming up pretty quickly, isn't it? June?
Yes,
or something?
It is. Yeah.
All right, Alan, we have an event. We only have a couple of minutes here.
Well,
and we have an
seconds.
Event, WAMC fundraiser. And this is it's a big moment for you.
It is because I worship Pete. First met him when I was 14 years old.
Pete Seeger.
Pete Seeger. There's only one Pete, really, the way I see it. WAMC presents Pete Seeger's centennial birthday concert with the amazing, amazing Happy Traum. There's nobody better. May 3rd at 7 p.m. at the Linda at WAMC's Performing Arts Studio. You could do it at WAMC.org. You can call 1-800-323-9262. Again, write it down, 1-800-323-9262.
And again, the seats are very limited. The Linda's a rather small, intimate venue, a couple of hundred seats. If you are thinking about going, you want to move fairly quickly, and that event is May 3rd. Our fund drive is in June. Everything we raise goes into the lockbox. Hey, thank you, Jen Smith, for being here.
Thank you, sir.
We'll see you next time. Chris Churchill, thank you. You've been well-behaved.
Oh, thank you.
And Joe Bonilla, thank you, sir.
As always, Ray.
Alan, thank you, and thank everybody for listening. There's a lot more roundtable ahead. We have, oh my gosh, I think Preet Bharara is coming up on the program.
And thank you, Ray.
And thank me as well. Yes, thank God bless us, everyone.